speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from another planet who came.
Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You are listening to episode 109. This and all of our back archives are available at milehighshow.com. And this week, I am sitting down with an old friend of mine. And if you live in the Prescott and Prescott Valley area, probably a friend of yours too, Mando Gonzalez. He was a staple in the bar and restaurant nightlife scene here in this area for the past decade and a half, if not more. And pretty much everybody up this way knows Mando. He has spent a lot of time both working behind bars, restaurants, food service, spent a lot of time under bars and in front of bars. He was, like I said, one of the staples of the nightlife scene out this way. And he also spent a little time when I got to know him best was when both of us worked for one of the sports franchises out this way. He was first a big supporter of the Arizona Adrenaline and then got hired in-house as their in-arena hype guy, where he would run up and down the steps of the arena between quarters and halftime and timeouts, getting the crowd motivated. He had a mic in his hand and would engage the audience, engage the kids to play the all kinds of stuff. They would just went wild. Mondo went wild in that arena for a very short period of time that the Adrenaline was in town. I was working for the team as a photographer and their media rep. And we got to hang out quite a bit there. He is a lot of fun. He is, like I said, an energetic and wild man. He has taken a little backseat to that role in recent months. We talk about his history here, how he ended up in Arizona from East LA to Arizona, and what led him here, what he did while he was here, and we close up the last half or so of the show talking about something that I'm, like I said, most of you who know him know about. He had a bit of misfortune several months ago, taking a bullet to the back. He got shot. So we get to talk to a guy who got shot, and he tells us what it was like, what circumstances led up to that dreaded night this past April, and how he's been coping with the rehab and the fallout from that evening. Now, excuse me. Now, social media. We talk about this social media being what it is. I reached out to Mondo after not talking with him for a while. Just our paths kind of went different directions. We were both very busy. I would bump into him occasionally while I was out recording this podcast. He was working at the brew pub in Prescott, Brick and Bones, and most recently the Canyon Club at Haciampa Resort. But we didn't talk a whole lot just because we were both real busy. And then I started seeing these posts on Facebook. Rumor mill, as it will, up this way, ran rampant of what happened to Mondo. Because, like I said, everybody knew him. The only thing people could agree on was that he was shot and that he was airlifted to Phoenix. There were reports of his demise. There were reports that he was involved in gang activity. There was reports that he was shot by a jealous boyfriend / husband / whatever. There were reports that he was a superhero. He had broken up a robbery and took a bullet while he was trying to stop crime, and all kinds of things. And we talk a little bit about those rumors. We talk about what happened that night in April. And we also talk about what actually happened from the man himself. So sit back, enjoy my conversation with Mondo Gonzalez, and hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Was he a perpetrator? Was he a crime fighter? Was he just in the wrong place at the wrong time? Sit back and enjoy my talk with Mondo. We recorded this episode at Big Daddy E's Barbecue in Chino Valley. Check out the full list of activities and food at Big Daddy's at BigDaddyE's.com. That's BigDaddyES.com. Smoking barbecue in Chino Valley. Eric Big Daddy himself is a great supporter of this show and a big help to me. So please go out and support Eric and the good folks at Big Daddy E's. We are also brought to you this week by Amazon. Please use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. This is the thing. It doesn't cost you a dime extra. What it does is it you use that link. Just bookmark milehighshow.com as your Amazon portal. That's your Amazon bookmark. Click that button at the bottom. It'll take you to your regular Amazon or Amazon Prime login page, just like you normally do, but it puts a little thing in there letting Amazon know you got there through the Mile High Show. And what that does is it lets you do your online shopping, picking up those shoes, those clothes, the camera gear, the batteries, whatever it is you buy online. And it lets Amazon know you got there through us. And guess what? They give us a little thank you at the end of the month. That's what helps us keep this show on. That's what helps us travel to and from places to interview folks. And it lets us present this show to you. So please use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com to show your support while you're shopping away like you normally would anyway. Again, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but it does let Amazon know you got there through us. Another way you can show your support for the show is by using the Audible link at milehighshow.com. Right there at the bottom of the page, there's a link to Audible where you can go and get a free audio download and a 30-day free trial through Audible. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can play them on your iPhone, your Android, Kindle, MP3 player, right through your computer, whatever you use to listen to audio content. Again, 180,000 plus titles available. Now, one of the ones that I downloaded through Audible is a great book by Steve Martin. You remember Steve Martin, Wild and Crazy Guy, King Tut, The Jerk, so many great movies, comedy albums. Well, he has had an incredible career, not only as a stand-up comedian, but a writer, director, actor, everything. He has touched every facet of the entertainment business, and he has put those experiences into a book, Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life, and you can get that for free at Audible. It's written and narrated by Steve Martin. It's fascinating. I'm in the middle of it now. I've been listening to it during some extended road trips I've gone on recently. But it's a great book, and you can get it for free by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. So click that Audible link and use the code MILEHIGH at checkout for your free audio download and a 30-day free trial. And that is the end of the commercials. Amazon link, Audible link, both of them at milehighshow.com. And support the show. So sit back, enjoy my talk with Mondo Gonzalez, and find out what it's like to take a bullet. And enjoy. We'll be right back.
Well, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here. I've never been. Where are we?
Chino Valley, Big Daddy E's Barbecue.
Nice. This is the first time I've ever eaten
here.
How's
the food?
It was really, really good. I just said, order me whatever you want.
And we had the Big Daddy, which is a good combo of everything. Which one did you like?
I liked the ghost pepper one. The ghost pepper one was really good. It was hot. It made me sweat a little bit. I don't really like too many hot things, but yeah, it was pretty hot.
I wanted to sit down, Mondo, and talk with you. And like I said, I'll do a separate intro where I talk about who you are and all that stuff. But you've gone through quite a bit in the last year or so.
Yeah.
And I want to get to that because you started to tell me something. I told you, stop. I want to talk about this on mic. But just let's go through a little bit of your background. You were telling me some of it. Where was home for you? Where'd you grow up?
Home, I was born and raised in East L.A. You know, I everybody's like, they quote the movie to me all the time. All the time. But no, really, I was born and raised in East L.A.
Cheech.
Yeah. Which I heard he passed away.
No, when?
I don't know. I saw something on Facebook.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hopefully that's one of those
or the other one. I don't. Yeah, I know. I just look at it and I'm like, oh, it's on Facebook, so it's got to be true.
Yeah, if it's on the internet, it's true.
No, I was raised in East L.A. Went to school in East L.A. It was Boyle Heights. It was right, I want to say, east of downtown.
What kind of neighborhood?
It was bad. It was gangland, you know. Which is funny because I do watch Gangland every once in a while. And to be honest, they do show my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, my neighborhood comes up, and I'm like, I used to go to that store. You know.
What was family like? Where are you in line with brothers, sisters?
Family was really, really tight. Our family was really huge. Well, most Mexican families are pretty big, and most Mexican families are pretty tight. So that's what we were. We were big, tight. We all visited each other all the time.
How many kids?
I am the oldest of four,
four's not big. Well, you're barely Mexican.
I'm talking about my grandmother had seven kids, and each of those seven kids had a minimum of four kids, except for my aunt, which was pregnant my entire childhood. I think she had like 12 kids or something. I don't know.
That's a litter. That's not a family.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm youngest of six. My mom wanted to have like 12 or 13. My mom and dad grew up next door to each other. And they were both kind of in the middle, the higher middle end of, my mom was like 11, my dad was of like 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
Grown up next door to each other in the Depression. So there was always a Martinez and a Santos in any grade for like decades.
Wow, that's kind of cool though.
So my mom wanted to have a lot more kids and just physically couldn't. And then I came along and I think emotionally and mentally she couldn't. After that,
did you break her?
She is broken. She lives here. She lives up in Paulden.
Nice.
You dropped your stick.
I dropped my cane. Hang on.
Yeah, she lives with my sister. She is broken. She has dementia and has some issues with her memory and things. So, it's directly attributed to raising the six of us. There was five. We lost a brother before I was born. To SIDS, but I'm the youngest. There was six of us. My oldest sister. No, you can go ahead. You can either join us or slide it over. Ooh, we got company.
Nice.
And my oldest sister's 7 years older than me. So six kids in 7 years. That was a...
Wow.
So I am fairly positive that... I'll slide this over in case you guys are going to eat. So you can use the stuff. Oh, you have not.
Oh,
well,
today,
we're going to give you the rundown. This was Mondo's
today
first
was my
day
very first day here. We had the, what was it?
The Big Daddy.
Big Daddy. The Big Daddy. It's awesome.
It's a big kind of sandwich with a few different meats in it. So it's like a little sampler kind of thing.
Bro, I would say it's good for two people, but I ate the whole thing. So that's how big the sandwich is.
I've been here once or twice. Today.
And they just opened.
Yeah. No, you order at the counter. Yeah. And there's a guy in there. He looks real mean and nasty. His name's Eric. Don't let him push you around. Just because he owns the place doesn't mean he gets to tell you what's up. That's a good commercial for our sponsor.
Right,
Big
there
Daddy
you go.
E's.
That works.
But yeah, my mom has... I am surprised she has lasted this long. She just turned 80 this year.
Wow.
And we put her through the ringer, boy. I had a buddy of mine. I've told this story on here before, but I have a buddy of mine who I don't see very often, but he knows my wife. He lives in Prescott. And I bumped into him at the grocery store. And he goes, "Hey, I saw your mom and sister, Meg. I saw your mom and sister the other day. Is she doing okay?" I said, "Yeah, she has her good days and her bad days." And we got our little son. Hey, like I said, just because you own the place, don't make you the boss. And we got our little he was five at the time, I think, this is a couple years ago. And that's one of the reasons she moved out here from California, to be closer to my son, her grandson. And he goes, "Yeah, she doesn't remember his name, Anthony." I said, "Sometimes she does." He goes, "Yeah, because she just kept saying, oh, the baby this, the baby that." He goes, "I didn't know if she was just having a bad day." I says, "Well, it's not really her fault, because when she comes over, they'll play. And then we'll take him in the bedroom, change his clothes, bring him out again. We told her we have twins." we have broken that habit of large families. My wife is the middle of 10, and we have the one. We were married 15 years before he popped along, and I don't think we are in many ways capable of having another child. I'm 50 years old. He just turned 7.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, hey.
Yeah, next year I'll be 40. I have a 20-year-old right now, and I'm happy. I'm good.
20 years old.
Yeah,
at 40.
Yeah, yeah. You remember him when he was running around when he was really, really small.
Yeah.
Yeah, time flies. Unfortunately, makes us all realize we're old.
Yeah, everybody kept telling me when my wife was pregnant. Oh, it's good. Your son, your baby's going to make you feel young. No, that's a big lie.
I agree.
Crawling around on the floor is like, oh, I felt like an 80-year-old man. Forget that. I'm so glad now he's old enough to run around by himself. I can just look out the window and watch him. If I need him, I got a BB gun to pop him in the leg.
Get one of those things that you use that you don't have to bend over to pick up the tennis ball to throw for the dogs.
Yeah, that's called a sun.
Okay.
I don't have to find a remote. There you go. I don't have to get stuff out of the refrigerator. He's my little gopher.
Nice.
So your son was born in California?
He was born in Long Beach.
At 20 years old, raising a boy.
Back in 1996.
How was that?
It was good. I mean, I was young, so it did still keep me young. He was running around. He was doing all his stuff.
Yeah.
You know, crawling. I mean, there's a lot of memories I have that would probably take way more time to talk about, but it was good. I really enjoyed being a dad. Yeah. Volunteering at schools, going to field trips, going to camping, doing Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, everything.
Nice.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Now, when did you guys move out here? Now, you guys being your ex-wife.
Me and my ex-wife and him moved out here the day after Thanksgiving in 1998.
So how old was he?
Two.
Two?
Yeah, he was 2 years old.
What brought you out here?
East L.A.
Just to get away?
Yeah, I was born and raised out there, and I was sure as heck not going to raise him out where I was raised.
Now, was there, you mentioned you had that tight-knit family.
Yeah.
Is that what kept you from getting involved and rolled up into the gang life? And
well, I mean, the unfortunate part is I did get involved in some stuff here and there. I did have a lot of family support, so I wasn't too involved. But, you know, it's really hard to stay away from something that's always around you. You know, you go to school with it. You go to elementary school. You go to middle school. You go to high school and all that stuff. You know, it's really hard to stay away from it.
Some of your buddies, your running buddies, get real caught up?
Most of them are unfortunately not here anymore.
Really?
Yeah, that's how bad it was. It was very challenging.
So this was for you in teen years, you're looking at late 80s?
Yes.
That was like the ramp up of what they're making movies about now. I mean,
that
was like the real hardcore end of the gangs coming up, the crack craze coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that up in Northern Cal, Oakland, San Jose, San Francisco. But by then I was, you know, I was a little older, so it wasn't something that affected me other than a user for But yeah, for a young kid growing up in that, what a nightmare.
Yeah, it was, you know, you adapt. At that point in time, I really didn't think anything bad of it because it was just the way of life.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know anything. Yeah, you didn't know anything different. You know, so you didn't really think it was anything different.
Uh-oh. Well, that it's the honey sauce, I guess. Oh, wait, we can do this. How about that? It might work. I don't know. So what was the wake-up call for you thinking, I don't want my son here?
Well,
or was it just the fact of he was born?
No, I did have a couple of wake-up calls out there, actually. When I was 15, I got into a lot of trouble with, well, my mom and stuff. Me and her kind of clashed a little bit, so she ended up kicking me out of the house at 15 years old, which was honestly was a blessing, because a couple of days after she had kicked me out, a couple of friends of mine went over to my house, and they went over to call me out to go and hang out down from where we lived. Yeah. And I was, if I were to be there, I would have gone down there with them. That same day, they ended up getting shot at by a rival gang, and one of them passed right there. The other one is paralyzed, and you know, it's just ended up being really horrible. And if I was there, I would have been one of those.
You'd have been right in the mix. Yeah. I think these people are really second guessing their
decision to
sit next to you. You felon.
I'm up here. I can honestly say I have no felonies. No.
Now, what when you came out here in 98, you said?
98, yes.
Who was out here?
My ex-wife's dad.
Okay.
We came out here for Thanksgiving in 97. We came out on Thanksgiving for 97 to go and visit him, spend the winter with him. He had never met my son, so we came out here and brought him.
Gotcha.
And so
okay.
We spent that Thanksgiving here, and
Chris's
he took us
family.
Yeah, and he took us everywhere to see everything, introduce us to a lot of people downtown and everything, and I immediately fell in love with the people out here. That was my very first impression.
You hadn't met me yet, otherwise you probably would have went back to L.A.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. It could still I think the ghost pepper one is the best, but it is a little spicy.
It's a little spicy. That Dr. Pepper one is a sweet, but it's
on the
good.
Sweeter side, yes.
And that sweet baby something is also pretty good.
Sweet baby Ray's is pretty good. That one's pretty much known by many.
That's what I do, is I do a little bit, because I can never remember which one, and then I just dip it in.
But
Eric's getting way too many commercials in this podcast.
Right?
Let's send him another invoice.
But what was I talking about? I already forgot.
Oh, about when you guys came out here.
Oh, that's right.
See,
I have issues.
97.
I have issues right now with memory as well, but that's for a completely different reason, which we'll get to later. But yeah, we came out in 97 for Thanksgiving to spend time with him. And like I said, I fell in love with him, fell in love with the town, fell in love with the people. And I told Chris that I wanted to raise my son out here. I do not want to raise him in East L.A. I do not want him. I was fortunate to get out of that alive and with everything that I have. But I don't want him to have to go through the things that I went through.
Now, you guys, when did you guys get married?
We got married in August 24th of 1998.
98. So right after, just before you got out here then.
Yes.
Nice. How'd you guys meet? Did you grow up together?
No, we didn't grow up together. It was really funny
white,
that
white
we met.
White girl in East LA?
How'd she meet me? Well, I was working aboard the Queen Mary in Long Beach. And I was working at one of the restaurants. That was my very first restaurant job ever.
What were you doing?
I was a host at like 18 years old. I was a host. I'm not a hostess. It's a host. Or now that I like to refer it to, I was a seating technician. But anyways, and I was in the steakhouse restaurant. She was a hostess in the fine dining restaurant.
Oh, nice.
That shared a kitchen with the steakhouse. So they got tickets from both restaurants.
It's almost like Titanic.
Yeah, you know what? I was getting there. I was getting there. People refer it to, oh, you guys met on the Love Boat or on the Titanic.
I guess it depends on when they ask you.
It depends on how old they are.
If they ask you before she moved to Alaska, it was a Love Boat, and after that, it was a Titanic.
Right, right.
Hi.
No, she's fine.
But yeah, so that's how we ended up meeting, and then we ended up just talking, and one thing led to another, and here we are. Well, we're not here together anymore. But
you end up out here.
Yeah, right? We ended up out here in 98 and stuff, and been out here since then. I have been. She's now in Washington. My son's now in Alaska living his dream. He loves Alaska. He's mining up there, gold panning.
Really?
Yeah. He loves
That's
gold
not
panning.
An easy life, though. Huh?
And he loves it, though. He's nice. Always been fascinated about Alaska all the time. He used to watch Ice Road Truckers. He watched It's Bigger in Alaska. Anything that had to do with Alaska,
what
he watched it.
That? What did that?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. I mean, I'm Mexican. I don't talk about Alaska. So I don't know.
The water's too cold to swim across.
Right? You walk across it over there.
Oh, man. Here, let me untangle here. There we go. So, lots of things transpired once you guys were out here.
Yeah. I mean, he was raised out here. I mean, we just became a family that tried to involve ourselves into the town.
You got involved in the town a lot.
Quite a bit, yeah, actually.
You were... There's a couple of guys, not so much now, and we'll get to that,
mm-hmm.
but there was a number of years where there was a couple of faces that were... that defined nightlife in and around Prescott Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You were one of them.
I was. Me and my mohawk.
Yeah. And your what was that? What did you wear that?
Oh, what's it? My Halloween costume? Yeah.
Let's not describe it way too much.
All you can say
send me a picture, though. I'll put it up.
If you remember the movie Borat, he had a bathing suit on.
Oh,
that's all
goodness.
I'm going to say.
You were out and about a lot. I think I met you the first time at the Jackass, if I'm not mistaken, or possibly a Sundogs game.
Jackass, Sundogs, Tailgaters.
No, it was before Tailgaters because it was leading up to. You worked at Jackass for a while?
I did.
Bartending?
I was bartending and the bar manager over there for a little while.
Where else have you worked? Behind or around the bar?
I've worked Jackass Tailgaters. I worked over at Prescott Brewing Company.
That's right. On the square.
Yeah, on the square. I was a server over there. I also worked over at the Liquor Deli downtown. I worked at Brick and Bones. And I just recently left that new golf course, the one that just took over Hacienda, which is Capital Canyon Club.
I was the
food and beverage supervisor out there for a little while.
And that was the last time I had talked to you before,
yes.
Very recently.
Yes.
You were over there. What was the... let me think, because I spent a number of years behind the bar as well. My first bar job I got was at a little place in Hayward called Arnie's Timeout. It was an old neighborhood beer and a bump bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I was a regular in there when I was like 17. Because my old buddy Kerry Manson, who was a few years older than me, used to take me. He's just come in with me. They won't ask. And when I was about 18, the bartender Debbie, who looked just like Demi Moore.
Nice. I would have gone there.
Yeah, that's one reason why we were there a lot. She needed help stocking the bar, and I was like, there was like three of us in the bar, so I was getting ready for a weekend night. So I said, oh, I'll give you a hand. So I start loading up. She buys me a beer. She says, what are you doing tomorrow? Can you come back and give me a hand? So I ended up bar backing for her.
Nice.
And tending bar there, I think I was 19 or 20. All under the table. Nobody asked. Then I got hired. The first official bar I got hired at was a place called Porky's. It was owned by several ex-cops in Oakland cop, Hayward cop, campus supervisor, Alameda County Sheriff, and somebody else. It was like five cops or ex-cops that bought this bar together and named it Porky's, and all the pictures were pigs in uniform.
I was going to say, that's funny. I like it.
He hired me one night, and he later told me, he goes, I got so sick of seeing you 7 nights a week, I figured if I hired you, you'd call off sick one night and I wouldn't have to look at you.
Because you ain't coming here.
Didn't work, but then I called off and I showed up. And hey, Corey. But, I had spent a number of years in and around working at bars.
Nice.
What
Well, you know, when
what
I first
brought it up for you, was it just your food service industry before? Or
no,
were you just
no,
hanging out at them?
I was, my first jobs were in food industry, and that was when I was 19, 20 years old. When I came out here, I was a family man, so I ended up getting a job over at Printpack, and I worked there for 10 years.
Which one? Where?
Printpack in Prescott Valley.
Printpack.
It's a big, huge building. Everybody sometimes thinks it's the post office. It's over on 2nd Street, over by the bowling alley, same street.
Who else worked over there?
I got a bunch of buddies of mine that worked there.
Did that guy, Oliver, work there?
Oliver who? Perversky?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he worked over there.
Did Mike Picard
work there? Dave Graham, Michael Picard,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they worked over there.
A bunch of Sundog crew were working over there, yeah.
A lot of people worked over there.
What did you guys do there? What was it?
It's printing in an industrial scale, meaning like printing for large companies like Dole, for Duraframe, for Frito-Lay, for Snickers, all that stuff. Like large printing, you know, and in a really large
labels,
scale.
Labels, packaging?
No, not
stuff,
labels. Or? We print the bags. Like, okay,
gotcha.
You go to the store and you look at a Frito-Lay bag. Okay, that bag gets printed at like 1,200 feet a minute in huge, huge rolls, like in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 pound rolls. And they get printed at 1,200 feet a minute. So you're printing like, I don't know, 7,000 bags a second.
And what were you doing?
I was a production operator, so I ran those machines.
So you ran a printing?
Yeah, I ran a laminator, a printer. I was an ink technician for a little while. So I did a lot of stuff. So I can mix
your
colors.
Your jobs all have really cool titles.
Ink
technician.
Right.
Seating. What was your other?
It was a seating technician.
Seating technician.
AKA I was a host. But no, I did that for 10 years.
Titles.
And after I came out of that, I just realized that I hated being in a building that had no windows. And I couldn't talk to anybody, and I was working graveyard.
What was the sound like in there? Was it?
It was loud.
You
had hearing protection. You had hairnets. You had eye protection for certain things.
So you're like, even if you're around other people, just the noise.
That's loud.
So you're basically it's like
yelling
being by yourself.
Yeah, pretty much. And
it's not like you can sit there and have a conversation like you would over a cubicle or something.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't happen. Especially because the machines are moving so fast. If something goes wrong, you're either going to have film coming out of your ears. Or you're going to fix it in a split second.
Yeah.
But no, from there, I just decided that I wanted to be more into being around people.
Yeah.
So then my very first place that I went to go and back into the restaurant business was Tailgaters.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, when did it become Tailgaters? Because it was, what was it before that?
It was,
it wasn't
Streets of
New York.
It was... Something at was it Streets of New York
before
no
moved?
Because yeah I think it was Streets
I think
of New York
it was
Streets of New York, but prior to that it was
we used to pop over there every once in a while from Sundogs. It was either that or Wild Wings,
yeah,
when Sundogs first what 06 07,
yeah,
whatever it was.
It was, what was it prior to that?
Sean,
it was a bar.
Tessman used
it was
to
a
take
sports
it.
Bar
was it Famous Sam's?
No, it wasn't Famous. Was it Famous Sam's?
I think so. And then it became a pizza place, and then it became Tailgate.
I think you're right. I think you're right. It was Famous Sam's.
Something like that.
That was back in the old days. Back when, what was that castle place used to be out there, too?
That closed, the Pee Wee Golf Place?
Yeah, the golf place.
That closed before I got out. I didn't get out here till 04.
Okay.
04, tail end of 04.
Okay.
And it was, I think...
Castle Golf, it was called.
That had closed already before I was out
here. Yeah.
I think it had just closed.
Well, they didn't even just close it. They ripped everything down.
I was at, when I was in San Diego last 2 weeks ago, right around the corner from where I was staying in, well, Chula Vista, to get back on the freeway, you went by, and I didn't know what it was at first, and after like the third time I passed it, it was very small. It was like right near the off-ramp. Batting cage, peewee golf. And then I don't know if it was like what was left of a water slide, like the pool end, or if it was like a skateboard park.
Uh-huh.
Because it was all abandoned. Everything was all tore up. But all the stuff was still there, the netting at the... So it looked like a pirate camp.
Nice.
The big net and the big pillars and then rocks. And
very,
little,
very cool.
Yeah, it was
I was just out in Chula Vista in August.
Oh, yeah?
Went to my family reunion.
Yeah.
It
How
was
that?
It was about 500 of us there.
Oh, man.
I told you we were big. Yeah, there's about 500 of us there. We had it right on some beach out there, some park that's right near some beach. And we went and stayed in Chula Vista. I mean, you could throw a rock to Mexico.
Yeah.
That's how close we were to the border.
I went in, I want to say 2010. Yeah, 2010, because my passport expired in 2010. And I didn't want to renew it, because I'm probably not going anywhere, but I wanted to get one of those border crossing cards,
because
it was a lot cheaper, plus, you know, we're so close.
Yeah.
So I got it, never used it. So when I went to San Diego, I got there Thursday afternoon, threw everything in the motel, took that.
Nice.
We had dinner in Tijuana.
Just did you knock the dust off of it?
I'm just glad I remembered to bring it. But I had I hadn't been when we first moved out here in 04. I went to Nogales a couple of times just to go.
Yeah.
But then after that, you needed your thing, and so when I got it, I never used it. But it was kind of nice. I got lost. I just walked. I parked and then walked across, and ended up getting lost. Just walking around.
I did the same thing out there.
And then it got to be dark. After I got something to eat, stumbled into just walked into a bar, watched some soccer in Spanish, didn't know what was going on, and just started wandering around. Before I knew it, it was like 10:30 at night, and I'm thinking, this probably isn't a good idea.
No, not at all.
So I waved out a cab to take me back to the border. He literally drove around the corner. I had been walking for like 4 hours, just in big circles. I ended up right back where I was.
That's funny.
Because I wasn't like near any restaurants or anything. I was like in the middle of a warehouse district.
Oh.
Like they make really bad movies that involve power tools in neighborhoods like this.
Exactly.
But I was like right around the corner. He literally drove around a big loop and here you are. $5.
our funny story about Nogales, because me and Chris and Logan went down there, and we wanted to stay in Mexico, right there on the border, stay right there. So we stopped, and we ended up having to get insurance for our vehicle, because if you cross the border,
you
have to have the Mexican insurance. So we stopped and got the insurance and all that stuff. We drove up to the border. We drove into Mexico. We drove around. Chris looks at me, and she goes, I don't like it. We literally made a U-turn and came right back out. And the guy is like, oh, how was your visit in Mexico? We don't know. We were here for about 5 minutes.
That's funny.
And then we stayed on this side.
I want to take my bike down there. I got some buddies of mine that go to Rocky Point a couple times a year. And I want to. I got it. You don't have, you get rid of your bike, huh?
It's in the works here and there. Yeah. I do and I don't. I need to get that fixed.
What'd you have?
It was a 2002 independent built. It was built on a Harley frame, but it's a custom bike.
Yeah,
and it's got one of those long frames, 220 tire in the back. It's pretty. I like it.
What was it? Purple?
It was red and silver. It had tank, red flames with the red fender.
That's right.
Flames on it and stuff like that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I got a old, it's 04 Cowie Vulcan. It's a 2000 cc thing. Nice. Is nice. It's like driving a,
I remember you wanted mine for a little bit.
Yeah. I was driving that thing. It's like riding a lazy boy down the highway. Yep. So, but I got buddies of mine that go down every once in a while. They go camping and stuff in Rocky Point. I've never been that far. I've never been past border towns. So I want to. We've been trying for the last couple of years to do a bike trip down there. Same thing. I think it's like $40 for a few days worth of insurance on the bike. But I'm looking forward to it. So anyway, so you're working in bars. Chris, Logan, living in PV.
That time, yes. When we first moved out here, we moved out to Prescott.
Prescott. Okay.
We lived in Prescott for a little while. Then we moved to PV.
Over back, I don't know where, I forget.
It was over by Spouse and something like that. Spouse and Robert. They were living over there. Then from there, we ended up moving to, that's when she ended up moving to Alaska.
Yeah.
With Logan. So that's after we separated. Fun times.
tell me again. About how she met her.
Oh, we had this discussion earlier.
We talked a little bit before we ate.
So, well, I mean, let's see.
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, just in the foot. I don't know.
How often do you... Yeah, we'll get to that, too. How often do you introduce your ex to her current?
Well, it was really funny. Okay, so Chris was already living in Alaska with Logan, and me and her...
They had already moved
to Alaska. They were already up there, and I was down here still, And one day I was out hanging out. And by this time, me and Chris had become really good friends. Our divorce was really, really great. We weren't angry with each other, weren't mad at each other. That went great.
So it was a decision. Mutual decision.
Yes.
For all three of you.
Yes. And it was a really, really good thing for us. So we didn't have any animosity. But nevertheless, so she's up there. And I ended up going to the bar for a little while. And I ran into this guy. He seemed really, really cool. We were talking and all that stuff. And we ended up drinking like all day. And then we started talking about our ex-wives. He's all like, oh, my ex-wife does this. And I'm like, no, my ex-wife does that. We were fighting on who's better ex-wife. Who had the better ex-wife? So here we are after a few cocktails, 2 a.m. in the morning. We start talking and he goes, all right, let's make a deal. Let's call our ex-wives right now at 2 a.m. and we'll see who has the better ex-wife. So we both called our ex-wives at the same time. Who's answered? Mine. So I made fun of him, telling him mine was better. So I let him talk to my ex-wife. This was almost 4.5 years ago. So I let him talk to my ex-wife.
And they lived happily ever after.
And yes, they lived happily ever after, and they are still together. Did you guys enjoy that? Oh, yeah. I am definitely coming back.
Yeah. Remember, he's open Tuesday through Friday. From 11 a.m. to,
So really, he's your sponsor.
I was trying to give him a little plug again. And tonight, every Friday night, at least through the spring and summer months, live music right out there on the patio.
Yeah, I saw Sky Daddy.
Sky
was
will
coming.
Be there tonight.
Sky is awesome. I love Sky.
And they have smoked prime rib.
Yes. So come back for dinner.
He'll be here.
I'll be here.
You know Dave Maisie?
Yeah, they were just here. Oh. Yeah, Dave and Jam just left here. Maisie's Gun Shop, not a sponsor, maybe someday. Yeah, they were down here when we got here. They were walking out. I work with Jan at her job. I do some stuff for the town here. So.
Okay.
Well, glad you enjoyed it.
We won't
tell Eric, right, though, because his head's big enough already.
He won't be able to get out the door.
He's the only one that can wear a sombrero as a skull cap.
Now, am I supposed to...
Oh, you leave it. We'll get it or take care of it. You guys are good.
We'll take care of the leftovers. We got this.
I told me it was obvious I wasn't going to finish.
No, we got to keep the guys inside busy. That's all.
I'm going to get one of those to go
menus. I'm going to do that as well, too.
Very good. And they do excellent catering. That's one reason why, at least I'm speaking for the boss now, that's why they keep their weekends as not open, is because he does so much catering stuff. Corporates, weddings, family get-togethers, you can get large orders to go. So at BigDaddyEase.com, I think that's the website.
Yeah.
Again, he's your sponsor.
Just Google Big Daddy Ease in Chino Valley. Yeah, they do a lot of large event stuff, so keep that in mind for your next large 500-person family.
Well, Christmas is coming up. Christmas parties.
Yeah.
You know, Thanksgiving, I'd rather have a brisket than a turkey.
A dried-out turkey.
Right.
They'd probably do a pretty good turkey, too. Again, don't tell him that. His head's big enough already. All right, where were I? Forget. Oh, so you play matchmaker?
I did.
You play Yenta for Chris and
they are
and
still together.
Significant.
And they are very, very happy, and I couldn't be any happier for her.
I am still friends with Chris on Facebook and follow her adventures on the bike.
Yep.
He's a big motorcycle rider, and they go lots of road trips.
They go on many, many places,
she's
yes.
She's pursuing her photography, which is good. She always had such a great eye. She did. I want to get to the bulk of our conversation. We haven't even got it. It's 35 minutes in. We really should start the show. You and I spent a good few months working side by side with a little venture called the Arizona Adrenaline out here.
Yes, I remember that.
What was your role?
My role, well...
Because it was a lot of fun.
I did a little bit of everything there. I, you know, there's days that I had to dress up and do a lot of sponsorship and looking stuff. I helped out with a lot of team events in feeding them and all that, or things where the teams had to go and take the players to certain places to do events and all that stuff. So I was a promotions. I did a lot of promotions there. The one thing that I really liked doing that was the most fun of all of it was called the hype man.
In the arena.
Inside the arena, getting all dressed up, just giving stuff away.
You know, in between play breaks, timeouts,
exactly.
Halftime, you were the guy
that ran around
like a madman having a blast.
Yeah, and people say that I don't like attention.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Now, that was a couple of incarnations of the adrenaline that unfortunately were doomed to not succeed in this area. But both times, I did a lot of work for them on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that excitement in the arena when we were there was a lot of fun. I wish it would have been able to continue. But
I do, too. I do, too.
Who knows?
You know what's funny is even to this day, I'll get certain people come up to me going, "Hey, weren't you that guy?"
With the blue mohawk.
Yep. I used to, back when I was doing it all the time, I used to get little kids come up to me in the supermarket, just come on, "Aren't you that guy from the stadium?" I'm like, "Yes, I am." And they would take a picture with me. And I'd be like, "Hey." So, yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
It was.
Hopefully we'll see some more excitement. We got the Suns coming in, the D-League in a couple of weeks. Tickets went on sale this past week.
You're here on the 4th. What's happening on the 4th, right?
Yeah, I'll be down there. That's the day after this launches. I got hired by a couple of services to go shoot.
Yeah, I'll be there. Just want to check it out, get some views.
I'm trying to figure out the auto white balance on my camera. Do I got to go in and tweak it? Because how do you get rid of that orange tint?
jaundice look?
We got presidential candidate Donald Trump coming to town tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
When this launches, but October 4th, he'll be at the Prescott Valley Event Center where we used to do the adrenaline stuff.
I did
marketing and press releases, media stuff for the adrenaline, a lot of photography, and the Sundogs photographer for a number of years right there at that arena where we're getting the Trump. Well, it works out perfect because he is wearing Suns colors. If he wears a purple tie and his orange hair, he will be the Northern Arizona Sun's new mascot, Mr. Donald Trump. But, yeah, hopefully we'll get some more excitement going in there, some more fun, because it's Catfish, Gary Spiker, and all those guys, Scott Rukey and all those, are working hard. They've kept the doors open. They've kept the events going. A lot of high school sports in there.
Oh, yeah. Lots
of those. Championship wrestling and basketball and volleyball, all that stuff.
Didn't the U, was it? One of the colleges are doing their hockey up here right now.
NAU, ASU,
yeah.
And they're doing a lot of stuff in there. Plus the public skate, which is nice. It costs them a ton of money to keep that open, but then again, it makes sure that the potential tenants, like the Suns, like possibly another hockey or the collegiate hockey, it keeps them on the map, knowing that there's still stuff going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gun shows, the trade shows, the home shows, all that stuff. But it'd be nice to have a second or possibly third pro team in there, not along with the Suns, maybe another hockey or something along those lines. I would love to see an arena football in there.
I would too.
I had a blast watching. So fast-paced. The last couple of years with my buddy Matt Hinshaw, who's been on the show in the past, he is the photographer for the Rattlers down in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm, that's cool.
So I've been going down helping him out with stuff on there. And it's just a lot of fun. So I think
if you ever got room in your car, I'd be happy to go. Especially I'm already halfway down there.
You know, Ashley Stovall, she was the Sundogs assistant GM.
I might
know her if you saw her.
Okay,
she is running a lot of the operations for the Rattlers.
Okay,
Chris Preston went down there as the club president. Okay. And hey, they're closely associated with the Northern Arizona Suns, too, so she's in charge of all that.
Nice.
Get up, Ashley. She's always taking care of me.
Oh, see? Well, then let her know that I want to go, too.
The last time that I hadn't seen you for a while,
mm-hmm.
then bumped into you, was it Brick and Bones at the time, or was it?
I think it was Brick and Bones at the time.
Brick and Bones.
Yeah, because it just turned
the
into the other one, yeah.
Yeah, you were working at the bar. And then we were talking a little bit. I was doing some shows there. We were doing some of these podcasts. And then I bumped into you, and I was asking you about something coming up at Brick and Bones. You were at Brick and Bones. You said, I don't work here anymore. I'm over at the golf course.
Okay.
And you had started over there. Now, when did you start there at Canyon Club?
Oh, shoot. That was in March of last year.
15?
Yeah, March of 15.
And so you were
there. That was like a month before they actually opened up, because I think they opened up in April. They opened up in April.
The Canyon Club?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was that before? What was going on?
It was Hacienda Golf Course before, but it was shut down for quite a few years prior to it being anything.
The course or the restaurant?
Both, everything.
Really?
Everything.
Because I had done some events there.
They had gone.
Sundogs had a couple of
I remember those,
their golf tournaments.
They had gone bankrupt, I believe, and then shut down for a number of years.
Now, how'd you get hooked up in there?
Right place, right time.
Just knowing people in the industry.
And just went over there and applied and got the position, and I have a lot of different experience, so took care of that and did that for a little while, and then after that, I just ended up not really doing too much after, because I got hurt.
Well, and then that's what I wanted to get to. You were there. Were you there when...
No, I had just left, actually.
Okay, so you just left. Okay, now, this gets to the bulk, the meat of...
My entire life is a meat, but...
Because I want to sit down and talk to you anyway.
Yeah.
We go way back. But when I reached out to you recently to sit down and talk, the internet is a great, large, and beautiful thing, and it's also one of the worst things.
It is. I can...
Especially in a town like we live in. We're small town, but we're not Paulden small town.
No.
We're not... So country small town like Mayberry, so to speak.
Yeah, right.
We're kind of in the middle, because Prescott, being the largest of our area here, about 60 plus thousand or so, the quad, Cinco, Five Cities area, whatever, Prescott, Dewey, Chino, Paulden, Skull Valley, all that, is about 150,000.
Wow, okay.
People, right around there. Depend on who you ask and what time of year.
Because there was that many people in like six blocks of my neighborhood in LA.
I came from a really small town of 150,000. We were so small we didn't even make the weather map on TV. But yeah, so it's a real big mix of retired families, college students with Embry and Yavapai, Prescott College. It's a real eclectic mix of people here. From the old conservatives to the freewheeling artists and musicians that populate Prescott. And then there's a bunch of knuckleheads that you and I bump into all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I have been included in that mix. The rumor mill that Facebook can stir can be a great source of entertainment. It can also get people very angry and heated up.
Mm-hmm.
And several months ago, and you'll correct me on the time frame, but I'm posting some stuff on Facebook, which is not just something I do personally. It's what I do for some of my businesses and some of my clients and some of my customers. So I stroll through Facebook more than I should.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to bill for it, so it's okay. And in one of the forums, or probably one of the Prescott pages or something, I come across a post that caught me completely by surprise. Mondo's okay. I think something to the effect of you got flown down to Phoenix you got transported down to Phoenix.
Yes.
Don't believe all the lies. Don't believe the blankety blank. And it just went on. And it was a buddy of yours, and I don't remember who it was, but posting, don't believe everything you read. And then it was followed by some posts and some comments that ranged from everything that, and I'm exaggerating a little bit here, but that you were you got caught in the crossfire of a bank robbery, you got caught in a drug deal, all the way up to you were injured stopping a crime, you were a superhero.
Yeah. Well,
contrary to popular opinion, not bulletproof.
Yes, many, many, many months ago, I
start at the beginning because you told me a little bit about it, and I had to stop you because I wanted to.
Well, it was really
what
funny.
What happened?
Okay, many, many months ago, I.
What are we talking? What month?
April. Back in April, I was a victim of careless gunplay that I'm not very proud of because. we all grew up with gun safety and what to do with guns and do this and do that, you know, and never drink and play with guns and all that stuff. Well, unfortunately, I did not listen to any of those, and I suffered some consequences. I was ended up me and a friend.
Okay, let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
Let's start. You wake up one day in April. You wake up in the morning.
Okay.
Or in your case, maybe the afternoon. I don't know. You wake up. And were you go hang out with your buddies? Did you go to work that day?
Let's see. What was I doing that morning?
Walk us through the time you wake up and get your first donut and cup of coffee.
What was it? What day was it? Hold on. Was it a Sunday? I think it was a Sunday. It may have been a Sunday or Saturday. I think it was a Saturday. April 10th was a Saturday. And I get up in the morning, and me and a couple of friends decide to go and meet up over at, Black Hole Brewing Company.
Yeah.
This was
Addictions
their,
now.
Yeah, it is now Addictions, but it was the very last day of them being Black Hole Brewing Company.
What
it was April 10th.
Name for a bar in a recovery town.
Oh, yeah, I know,
Addictions.
Right?
Go ahead. Okay. Anyway, Black Hole Brewing Company over there.
We were
there
over there.
Springs.
We decided to go over there because it was their last day. They were going to have giveaways, drink discounts, bands all day long. It was their last day being open before they sold and became Addictions. So that's what we decided to do. So me and a couple of friends went over there. Well, I was going over there periodically throughout the entire day, you know, and then at the end of the evening, I was going to meet up with a few friends of mine over there again in the evening to go and have a couple of cocktails and hang out and all that.
So this was it was a day off. You and all your buddies, you're just going to hang out around town and have a good time. It was a typical spring Prescott day. Okay.
Was it still? No, I think it's summer now.
April?
No, you're right. It was spring. So it was a typical spring day. We were over there doing what we normally do whenever we have days off. We all go day drinking. That turns into evening drinking. That turns into night drinking. That turns into stumbling home.
But that in this case turns into a trip to the hospital.
Well, on. It's funny. So we go. Everything happens. Well, night trickles down. Friends fall off. They go out and they go home. They do their thing. Well, I was just hanging out with one friend at this point in time. And we've had quite a few cocktails. We end up going back to her place, and we had a couple of more cocktails. We started playing with a firearm. We wanted...
Okay, let's stop there.
Yeah.
Listeners here know, obviously, that Arizona is a typical southwestern town.
Yes.
Where... You know, area anyway. Prescott is a typical southwestern town where guns on the street, guns on your hip, guns in a grocery store are the norm. And I hate to use the word gun culture, but hunting is the norm here, not
yeah,
where I grew up.
It is.
Where I grew up, two people had guns, the cops and the people the cops were chasing. That was it. Here it's not. People are raised around guns, like you said, gun safety, using them for what guns are intended for, you know,
yes,
hunting and target shooting and stuff. So a gun in the house in this area is not uncommon.
No,
for
it is
people
nowhere near
growing
uncommon.
Up in San Francisco, LA, it's a whole different thing. It's not like, okay, go ahead. So,
no,
so there was a gun in the house, which is a normal activity in this area. What's
no,
not it, normal is popping it out when you're
drinking. No, so we did. And yeah, it is normal. I mean, nobody freaks out because they see a gun sitting on the table. It's just what it is. You know, everybody knows what they should be doing with it. Well, in this case, I decided to ignore every single thing that I knew. And we did. You know, we were in our vision being safe, and we pulled the clip out.
What kind of gun was it?
It was, I don't know, but it shot 9mm and it hurt.
Okay, so it's a 9mm. Semi-auto, if that had happened, and it wasn't a revolver.
Yeah, it was semi-auto. Okay. And so, you know, we pulled out the clip to, you know, handle the gun and all this stuff. Well, again, you always check the chamber, and we never did.
And when watching Law & Order, and they go to the shooting range, Jerry Orbach would say, clear the chamber.
right?
And that did not happen.
No, that did not happen. Well, let's rephrase that. It did happen.
Oh, it didn't happen.
It just came out the wrong way. It came out the front instead of...
What's going on? How many folks in the room? You don't have to name names.
Just me and one other.
Okay, so there's two of you there.
There's two of us, yes. And that's it. That's the only two people that were there. Okay. Just me and her, and that's
Again,
it.
Again, the rumor mill, there was this... Another one that I heard was there was this big old party, and you guys decided to play Russian roulette.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, see, that one is really, really hard to play when I got shot in the back.
See, if that ever happened in my house, there would be no way my wife can get away with saying it was an accident because she has told so many people she wants to kill me over the years. And so many people know me to know, why hasn't she killed you yet? There would be no way that could ever be construed an accident in our house.
One person asked me, did my ex-wife come back and shoot me? Like, seriously?
Oh.
No, but there were tons of rumors about what happened that night, which I think is really hilarious.
What were some of the ones that you?
Let me see. One of the ones where I sat on a gun, I shot myself three times in the back. Yeah, I heard that one too. A kid shot me by accident. That I got caught up in a gang fight. That there was bikers chasing me and they shot me. That I was in East LA and got shot at. There's just tons and tons of stupid rumors out there. And the whole thing was, you know what? We were horse playing and messing around with the gun.
Thinking is an empty.
Yes.
Hunk of metal.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you know, and the unfortunate part is it's. I did not do this to myself, but it did go off by accident.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm here, I'm alive, and it works.
Entered in your back?
It went into my back.
Tell me the course it took.
Literally, it if you looked at it, because you can still see where it went in, if you looked at it straight on, you would think that it went straight towards my spine. That's how center of my back it is. But it just veered to the right. It just barely by a hair missed my spine. It went through my lung. It hit the front of my chest cavity. It made a heart right turn, and it went through my ribs on the right side, and it never exited my body, but it landed between my skin and the outside part of my ribs, and it sat there for some time.
So it moved around in there.
Yes,
so.
It was a hollow point, so it opened up. And when
like mushrooms up a little
it
bit.
It opened up and mushroomed out, and I'll send you pictures of it. It looks really, really cool. I should have brought it with me. I usually bring it all the time.
I was just going to say, what did you do? We'll get there. We'll get to where they removed it. So it bounced around, barely missing your spine.
Mm-hmm. It went through my lung,
through
so my lung collapsed. Part of it broke off, and it went through my liver. They had to cut out half of my liver. Somehow, part of my kidney got damaged, so they cut out 10% of my kidney. Mm. I had IVs and stuff going down my throat and all that stuff.
That all happened at the hospital.
Yeah.
We're still back at the house.
Okay.
So what I have been shot at.
Oh, me too. Multiple times.
By a guy who thankfully was very drunk and bad aim. So I had to replace a car door window and my pants. But nothing else. Most of us know what it's like being shot by watching TV.
Yes, true.
What was it like getting shot from a guy who actually got shot?
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I got shot and I couldn't get up and run like they do on TV. You know, or I can't save anybody else's life like they do on TV.
You're not going to tie it off and then go chase it.
Yeah, right. Put a tourniquet on it. Let's just go.
What did you feel? I'm assuming you heard first.
I heard. It was a really interesting feeling because I heard the gun go off. I heard the sound. And then I felt it. All I did is I felt it go through and go in my body. When it stopped on my side, all I felt was it burning. I didn't feel any pain. It wasn't hot. I had so much adrenaline in that split second that all I felt was it burning. And it really didn't burn that much either. You know?
I mean, I don't want to push this up too much, but you're pretty hammered, I'm imagining it.
I wasn't pretty hammered, but I did have a lot of cocktails.
Okay.
For me, drunk, I'd have to drink an entire keg.
Yeah. Do you feel that might have helped the pain, or is it just a matter of... that's what happens when that much trauma goes through in such a small
point. You know what? Being intoxicated probably helped my brain function in the fact that I stayed relaxed.
Okay.
You know,
kept you from going into shock, maybe.
Yeah, I did not go into shock whatsoever the entire time. It did help. I don't know. I don't know how it would feel if I wasn't drinking.
Now, to clarify, we're not encouraging people, if you think you're going to get shot,
to get drunk first
to help you in the event you get shot. That's not what we're saying.
No,
I'm just going.
No. I would not. I would not advocate. Westerns, getting,
you know,
shot
they,
at all.
They, do, they have you guzzle whiskey, bite down on a stick, and then they go in and take it out.
Yeah. Which, ironically, they didn't take it out. I'm like, seriously?
So
they
what,
left
you,
it in there.
You hear it?
I hear it.
You
it went
feel
in.
It.
I felt it. It felt like it was burning.
Did you smell anything?
I don't remember.
Like gunpowder? I'm just curious.
I don't remember.
Like shooting range and stuff, that's one of the things coming up. Obviously, you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to photograph on ranges many times, and I've shot on ranges as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ear protection, you got the little squishies in your ear, but what's always that smell, that gunpowder smell.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when we used to light firecrackers on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
As kids. But it's that smell. I was just curious, in a small, and that's always been in open spaces, you know, in open ranges and things. You don't remember any kind of gunfire smell?
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, I didn't actually ask to stop her to see if she smelled it either. That wasn't really on my mind.
Just
so I don't remember
hindsight.
If I did or not, honestly. But no, I don't remember if I had a smell or anything like that. I do remember looking down. The split second that it happened, I looked right down at my chest. And I looked at myself, and the only thought that went through my head was, well, that's unfortunate. Those were my words. Well, that was unfortunate.
Now, you weren't seeing anything out of your...
No, nothing came out. It was inside still.
But you knew that was a gunshot.
Yes.
You didn't think, oh, car backfiring. Oh,
no.
M80s.
No.
You knew at that point.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
We did not clear that chamber, did we?
Yeah. It was an experience.
And then what happens?
let me think. I after me saying it was unfortunate, my first thought to my head was, you know what? This will be fine. Just go grab a Band-Aid. That didn't work either. Like it just didn't work. But I'm
did
thinking
you collapse?
Here. Well, I'm thinking down? Here that I'm okay. I'm still standing up, and I'm looking down at me, and this is all in the matter of like 3 to 5 seconds. Okay. I'm still thinking I'm okay, and I'm thinking, like, you know what? I'm all right. You know, we just put a Band-Aid on this. Then I go to move, and I couldn't move my legs. I literally just fell to my knees, and I stood on my knees, and then very slowly I went straight, and I fell on my face, and I laid there until 911 got there. Thankfully, they got there very, very quickly, and I still need to... thank all those first responders, because I have not gotten all my reports to see who was there. But I am still getting reports here and there of what transpired and who was there and what was going on and stuff like that, because I still do personally want to go up and thank all those first responders, because it was traumatic and it was a big thing, and they had to go there, they had to assess, and they had to make their split second decisions to save my life.
So you get hit,
mm-hmm.
You go down. 911 gets called.
Well, this is the funny part, because this is where you stopped me, and I was getting ready to say this next thing. So I tell her, I go, no, she said to me, she's like, I need to get something to go to put on the bleeding. I need to stop the bleeding. I'll be right back. I'm going to go get something. You know, and she's also on the phone with 911 telling them, you know, where I live or where she lives. And
you're in Prescott at this time.
Yes, we're in Prescott. And obviously she's panicking a little bit. I'm still laying there going, like, why can't I move? You know, I should be able to move. I got shot in the back. Well, she comes running back from the bathroom. I'm thinking she's going to slap a towel on me and just put pressure on me. She gets there with toilet paper.
A roll she, or like?
No, a couple of pieces of toilet paper. And pushes it on me. The first thing was like, oh, am I hurting you? Am I hurting you? I'm like, I just been shot. Push it as hard as you can. But I'm just, you know, this whole time, everything was just super funny to me. The police department finally got there. Paramedics finally got there.
Who got there first?
The police officers.
Police get there first.
Yes. And I can't remember off the top of my head which cops there were. I have the police report that tells me now, who got there.
And again, whether you remember or whether you read it or heard about it later, were they thinking this was an active shooter going on?
Oh, yeah. They have protocols. They're going to go in there because they didn't come straight to me. They came in guns drawn. You know, they asked questions, who was where was what, is there anybody else?
Yeah, who else
they,
is in the
they
room?
They searched the entire apartment. They had to make sure everything was safe prior to the paramedics coming in. You know, they confiscated the gun. They saw where it's at. They, you know, made sure they kept an eye on that and everything. But no, the paramedics came in, and they're trying to assess me. They're trying to look for an exit wound, which there wasn't one. This again, was really super funny because I was wearing a really cool shirt that I really, really liked. And I had some really awesome pants on that really made my butt look great. So the paramedic goes to me. He goes, "Well, sir, we have to cut off your clothes." And I looked at his guy. I go, "What?" And he goes, "We have to cut off your clothes." I go, "No, I really like this shirt." And he goes, "Sir, we have to save your life." I'm all like, "Well, that's rude. I really like this shirt." And he goes, "We have to cut off your pants too." And I'm like, "Dude, these pants probably cost more than your uniform."
Oddly enough, not the first time a night of drinking has ended with you getting your pants cut off.
Very true. True. It is the first night that I ended up being out for about 19 days.
Oh, man.
But no. So I totally was telling the, and I was joking around. But I was telling him, I'm like, "My pants cost more than your uniform," and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it was what it is. I never went into shock, to be honest.
Now, what are the cops telling you? I mean, are they, during this, were they trying to get info, or had they already?
Oh, no, they were
been able to ascertain what happened.
They were questioning still. They questioned multiple times, the same questions and stuff. And I understand why they do all of that. You know, I've been in and around certain situations many times. They ask you the same question many times. They ask you the same question differently all the time. You know, and you know, we had nothing to hide. We said everything, and
it was
an accident. You know, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate that it happened.
Yeah.
You know, but so they kept asking me questions. They kept asking me if I knew who I was. They kept asking me all kinds of stuff. Believe me, this night was really adventurous because it doesn't even stop there. they flipped me over onto my back. And I guess this is one of the moments that I actually didn't remember, because I still don't remember this moment when they flipped me onto my back. Because when they flipped me onto my back, they told me that I let out this huge scream, like an extremely painful scream when they flipped me over. I don't remember that whatsoever.
That's probably your body blocking out that pain.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they flipped me over and they put me on the stretcher, and they had to carry me down from a second floor apartment that had a U-shaped staircase to go down, and I'm on a stretcher, and I'm not really that small of a person.
And those don't bend. Those stretchers don't bend.
And neither do I anymore.
Yeah.
So, they had to carry me down that, put me into the ambulance, and they drove me straight to YRMC, but they didn't take me to YRMC. They took me straight to the helipad.
Oh, gotcha.
Wait. So they took me straight to the helipad, and they put me right on the helicopter immediately to fly me down to John C. Lincoln. So I'm up in the air, and I'm talking to the paramedic, which is sitting behind me, and I'm asking him questions, and I'm just, you know, where are we at? What's going on? And then all of a sudden, I just stay quiet for a second. He's like, "Are you okay?" I go, "I'm getting really cold." And he goes, "It's okay. We're in the helicopter. You're probably feeling a draft or a breeze."
Yeah.
And I go, "No, this is a different kind of cold."
Down to the bone.
Yeah, I go, "This is a really different kind of cold, a cold I haven't felt." I go, "I need you to do me a favor right now." And he goes, "What?" I go, "Talk to me. Talk to me the entire time, and I don't care what you ask me. I was in and out here and there, but I never lost consciousness, and I never, ever flatlined once. I was in and out of consciousness that whole time." And as he was asking me questions, all of a sudden, I mean, we're up in the air and we're going down to Phoenix.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I hear all these noises going off. Well, I don't know if anybody's ever really been in a helicopter getting medevaced anywhere. You're sitting right next to the pilot. You're laying down right next to the pilot. So I lean over and I look at the pilot and I'm like, "What's going on?" And he goes, Well, the helicopter's malfunctioning. We have to make an emergency landing. No, seriously. He goes, we have to make an emergency landing. We called in another helicopter to come and get you and take you to the hospital.
Where did you land?
I don't remember. All I remember is there being...
Somewhere en route.
It was somewhere en route. I remember landing somewhere where there's basketball courts. Somewhere between here and Phoenix. There were basketball courts. There was a big old field on there. But I don't remember where.
I know they use landing zones at a lot of schools and things. It could have, you know,
it could have been a school,
space.
Yeah.
Wow.
Something like that. But yeah, so I'm hearing him say this, and I look back more behind me, and I see all the red lights going off in the helicopter. What's my first question? I'm like, ha, that's what you guys get for cutting off all my clothes. That was the first thing I told him, and he just started laughing like crazy. It was funny. I thought it was funny. But so, ironically, I mean, the helicopter went down quick. We didn't crash. We did not crash, but the helicopter went down fast. It went
straight down,
and it landed, and it hit really hard. And so it hit and kind of bounced a little bit, but we landed, and we survived and all that. Well, there was no other helicopter available. So here I am, bleeding, shot, in a really good mood because I got morphine pumping through me right now, and talking to the guy, and then all of a sudden I see an ambulance coming down the field up to the helicopter, and then I get pulled out of the helicopter and get shoved into the ambulance and driven the rest of the way to John C. Lincoln.
Any idea how long of a drive?
Oh, hell, I don't know.
You were floating?
Yeah, I have no idea. All I know is...
Hopefully it was pretty close. Hopefully you were already down.
I don't know. All I know is I remember getting to John C. Lincoln still conscious. And I remember faintly remembering somebody, I don't know who it was, saying to somebody else, going, I have no idea how he survived this trip. And they're like, I don't know how he survived this trip. When I got there, they induced a coma. So I was in a coma in and out for about 13 to 14 days, and then I was kept sedated for the rest of the 19 days that I was
so
down
they
there.
So they can go in and do their work and let your body heal without you?
I would assume so. It didn't work, but I would assume so. My body was still consistently moving around.
We're good.
Thank you. Yeah, I was still moving around. There's way more to that, too, though. But so I get there, and I remember hearing somebody say, you know, I'm surprised you survived this trip. And then that's when I ended up going unconscious because, I don't know, I just felt that, well, this is a good place to
I'm
make
here.
Sure I close my eyes now.
I'm here.
So I did. And the next thing that I remember personally was waking up about 14 days later in the hospital, covered in tubes.
Still down there.
In John C. Lincoln. Covered in tubes all over. Tubes coming out of my arms, my throat, my nose, my... pants,
everywhere.
Everywhere that's in my pants.
Well, because everything's connected. You're breathing through your lungs. That was injured.
Yeah,
your digestive system and everything through your stomach. Kidneys,
for them to reinflate my lung, they had a tube on the bottom of my lung and on top of my lung. So I got two holes right there right now, too. I had a jugular IV. They ended up having to pump 9 units of blood into me.
Yeesh.
I have a lot of people inside of me right now. So
again, not all that uncommon after a night of drinking.
But so, you know, opposed to the helicopter
like
ride and the bullet,
Saturday
it's
night.
Just another Saturday night. But it was entertaining. So when I finally came to, okay, I was still. I looked down at my stomach because they ended up having to cut me wide open on my stomach. They cut me from the bottom of my chest cavity all the way to under my belly button. I have a huge scar right there right now. When I woke up, that scar was completely healed. So I don't I don't even remember any of that whatsoever. It was completely healed. The bullet wound still was open. The unfortunate part is, while I was out, the doctors and the nurses told me that I kept trying to physically get up. I kept trying to get up.
Unconsciously
trying to get up. I unconsciously was pulling tubes out of my throat, out of my nose, And I'm really not happy to say this, but I pulled my catheter out 4 times. I don't remember this.
Good.
Thank God.
Good, good, good. I'm sure that leads why they were trying to keep you
sedated. Yes. Yeah. Well, the other thing they did, if some of you do know me and have seen the pictures on Facebook, because there were a lot of them posted even while I was in the hospital. If you look close, my hands have gloves on them. They have little white mittens, they look like, on them to keep me. And my hands were tied to the bed to keep me from getting up, keeping me from moving, keep me from pulling out. That the hospital has a policy not to do that unless you're harming yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up was one of the ones that unfortunately, unconsciously was harming myself. My mother was by my side most of the time. She was a huge advocate of you better tie him down or he's going to hurt himself. So I was tied down. So when I came to, my hands were tied, and I was asking questions, and they told me that I was doing all kinds of retarded things, that there was apparently a few times I was coming in and out of that consciousness, that I was flashing people. again. I was
what
in ICU
you call Saturday night.
I was in ICU, so they don't have any doors in ICU because they're keeping an eye on you.
They got to come in and out quickly.
Everybody that was walking by, I'd be like, "Hey, here you go. Hey, here you go," and I'd be flashing everybody.
You still getting any calls from any of those nurses?
Not yet, though. Here it goes. here we go with that, though. But I even in this state. I apparently even asked a couple of nurses if they wanted to come over and have babies.
you can't even keep a good man down.
Even unconscious, I everybody's like, "Well, that's you."
No. Yeah.
I'm like, "Seriously, man? Like, I can't even behave unconsciously." But anyway, so that happened, and I thought it was pretty funny. So. Yeah, they ended up after 19. I went in April 10th and I got out on April 29th. When I got out on April 29th, I did get to meet the doctor that did most of the surgery on me. I did thank him. He's a miracle worker. And unfortunately, I cannot pronounce his name because everybody has. He's either Chinese, Japanese. He was brown, so he had to be Indian or something like that. I don't know. But you know what? God bless them. I love those people right now.
Yeah.
But I told him, "Thank you. Thank you very much." And he looked at me. He's like, "Well, you're welcome, but I need to tell you right now." He goes, "Because you got shot so close to your spine, be prepared that you may not be able to ever walk again." And he goes, "Also, you may have some, you know, mental issues right now as well. So just be prepared for that." So apparently I have a lot of PTSD as well. So I told him, "No, you know, that's not an option." And so I says, "Like, that's not an option. I'm going to do what I have to do. I'm going to do what I need to do." So from there, fortunately, I got placed in Mountain Valley Regional Rehab here in Prescott Valley.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is the number 7 rehab place in the entire country.
Nice.
It is one of the top rated rehab places in the entire country, and they are amazing there. Every single nurse and doctor and everybody that is in that place did such a wonderful job with my recovery. I could not thank them more than anything in this world. I went there after I got out there. I went there often, and I still go there, you know, to say thank you to. They don't accept volunteers, but you know, I go and donate stuff.
Yeah.
And I still say thank you to a lot of the people that helped me, the physical therapists, the nurse, you know, even the front desk people that were sweet as heck.
Now what's involved in that? What do you mentioned there's some issues emotionally and dealing with just surviving through a trauma like this.
Yeah.
That and physically, what have you as you're snapping your neck, I know we should wrap this up quick. I don't want to take up your whole day.
No.
But what was your rehab? What did it entail? What was it like?
What did my rehab entail?
What
well,
do you still do?
My rehab entailed relearning how to walk, relearning how to eat, relearning how to use silverware, relearning how to do the day-to-day things as far as in putting your own shoes on, putting your own anything on. You know, going to the bathroom on your own. Things that people take for granted every single day. Wiping your nose, you know. Blowing your nose was one of the most difficult things that I could do. Sneezing killed me.
Because of my abs and my
just all the internal issues that I had doing. That, you know, was killed me. When I sneezed, I almost broke out into tears because it hurt so bad. So I had to relearn so many things. But I was very stubborn when we got there. I didn't believe that I could, that I had to do. Yeah. I didn't believe that I had to do all of that stuff. They put me on a bed that had an alarm in it because if I got up, it would go off because I was on, if I needed help for anything, they had to be notified and they had to help me do it. Even if it was like picking up the remote control from the opposite side of the bed. They didn't want me turning or anything like that. Well, unfortunately, again, like I was really stubborn. So I tried to get up out of bed a couple of times. The alarm went off. The nurses would come running in. I'd get lectured for like the first 2 days. I was super, super weak. I went my first day for physical therapy. They picked me up, put me in the wheelchair, took me all the way to physical therapy. And they told me, they go, they ran me through tests. I went into the hospital weighing at 192 pounds. I arrived to Mountain Valley Regional weighing at 160 pounds in 19 days. I lost 32 pounds.
Man.
All muscle mass, lost everything. And if most of you know me, I had a good deal of muscle mass, but now, you know, I'm working on it. Now all the muscle is just going right into my gut. They put weights in front of me and they say, okay, you need to lift what you can of these weights so we know where you are and your arm strength. So they put like, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8 pound weights right in front of me. You know, me being who I am, I went to pick out the 8 pound weight. Yeah, that didn't work. I went to pick up the 6 pound. Yeah, that didn't work. I went to pick up the 4 pound. Still literally didn't even budget. I went to the 2 pound and I swallowed my pride and I went to pick it up and I barely lifted it up off the table before I had to throw it back down.
Yeah.
I was that weak.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. So I had to go through all that. I ended up having an emotional breakdown 3 days in there. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning and I ended up just breaking down. I had my own room. You know, a lot of the beds in there you have to share and stuff like that, but I was fortunate to get my own room. So I had my own room. I was able to do whatever the heck I wanted to in there and I broke down. I broke down and I started crying and stuff. And one of the nurses heard me as she was walking by and she came in and she sat with me for a couple of hours. And I just pretty much vented the same thing over and over. I'm like, this is not me. This is not who I am. I'm not going to do this. I need to get better. I need to get better as soon as I can. This is not who I am.
Yeah.
So the next morning the doctor comes in because the nurse told the doctor about everything that was going on. And the doctor comes in. And I told him, you know what, doc? I need you to just load me up on physical therapy. I need to get over this. This is too much on me. So he's all like, well, we're going to give you as much as we can. We're not going to overexert you, but I'll give you a couple of hours here and there more for you to do the physical therapy. So he did. He gave me a couple more hours, and I busted my butts for the rest of the time that I was there.
That breakdown you had at 2 o'clock that morning, you think that was the start of your recovery?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Because at first, like I said, I was stubborn. I didn't want to do a damn thing. Yeah. I was going to do it all on my own. You know, I don't need anybody's help. That's just who I was. Yeah. But I realized at that point that I do need help. I needed help. I needed a lot of help.
So physically, where are you now?
Physically, I would say...
I think the first time I saw you was at the parade a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
You're getting along pretty well. It was good to see. You look like your old self. Where are you at?
You know, as far as recovery, it's still going to be a really long way. I cannot work right now because I don't have the endurance yet. My lung is still healing. My ribs are still healing. So I don't have that endurance yet to get that going. So I cannot work right now. I can't walk very well because the bullet did cause somewhat of a little bit of, even though it didn't hit me in the spine, which is great because after me doing me having that breakdown and deciding that I'm going to work harder and get help, I ended up being at Mountain Valley Regional for about 12 days before they looked at me and said I was good enough to be able to walk and to take care of myself. I went from being carried in there on a stretcher, put into a wheelchair, to 12 days later, literally walking out of the hospital without any assistance whatsoever.
Nice.
I have pictures of me walking out of that hospital with zero assistance. You know, so I ended up getting very, very determined and said, you know what, I just put myself to it. And to this point right now, I am really determined. I still use a cane. I still walk very slow. I still take a lot of breaks. But I can do stuff.
Yeah.
I cannot work because I cannot keep that endurance up. The unfortunate part is my memory is not that great right now. You know, it messed up. We were talking earlier about your mom and her memory.
Yeah.
You know, mine, unfortunately, is self-inflicted. Just like when people get hangovers, I don't have sympathy for them either. It's self-inflicted. My memory is not that great. I can't sit for very long periods of time, which I'm probably going to have to stand up soon. I can't walk for long periods or stand for long periods of time. So I'm consistently standing up or sitting down
breaking
or
up
standing up. Yeah.
Breaking.
And so I have a lot of medical issues right now. But as far as me internally, I'm doing great. I'm a happy person. I want to stay a happy person, but I do have internal demons right now. I'm angry because I can't work. I came angry because I can't think sometimes. I'm angry because a lot of stuff is wrong with me. And I've begun to recognize those issues. So again, being the type of person that I am, hate looking for help, I have decided to look for help, to seek help because I need it.
Yeah.
I'm suffering from PTSD about it. And recently, I have just a month and a half ago started going to West Yupai Behavioral. You know, it's not only for addicts, it's also for people that need help.
Yeah.
You know, I need help. You know, so I'm going over there to talk to a counselor to try to get my mind back where it's supposed to be. Just trying to be a better person right now because I'm not right now. You know, so I am seeking that help right now, and it's still ongoing. I'm positive about how things are going to end up and how things are going to be being. I have a lot of friends around me rallying and supporting me, which I love every single one of them to death. I can't name them all because we'll be here for another 2 hours, but there's so many of them that it just stood by my side, you know.
Let's go back to the bullet. Where is it?
The bullet right now is at home on a shelf. They ended up taking it out about 3 months later.
Oh,
yeah.
So
it was,
they left it where it was. They didn't do it right at the...
Yes, their reasoning was that they didn't want to go into my body and cause more trauma, because they did go into my body and cause a ton more trauma to help stop the bleeding for days.
And it was in a spot where it could be safely...
Yeah, it was. That's what it was. It was in a spot that it could be safely stay in there for a little while in order for them to cut it out. Because I've had a lot of people. It's a 9mm that's basically cut in half now because it mushroomed all the way up. You know, it's probably if the average person, you take their pinky and it's just their front part of their pinky, maybe a little smaller than that.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely a lot smaller and round depending on how big you are.
Yeah, like a pencil.
Yeah, like a pencil.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's going to be made. I got a really good buddy of mine, Milo, that's going to make a necklace out of it for me. He does jewelry a lot, so he's going to make me a necklace. And
a reminder.
And I'm going to hang it around my neck. Well, I'm all like, well, I want that thing to go everywhere with me. It went everywhere with me for 3 months. Why not keep it with me all the time?
And I got to ask, you don't have to answer if you want, the young lady you were with that night, how was she?
You know what? I wish her the best of luck. She's a really great person, but she is going through a lot of... things herself as well. She's had to seek some help as well.
I can only imagine.
Yeah,
I mean, can imagine that would be.
It is something that you'd never think that would ever happen to you or to somebody else.
Yeah,
you know, and she's got damaged mentally, and it's unfortunate, and I feel for her, but. You know, just like me, she's looking for help as well,
good.
And she's getting it. And hopefully, you know, in time, I got to meet up with her again after the whole situation. And I looked at her in the face and I told her, you know, I don't blame anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that just happened. And I want her to be better. I want her to get help. And I'm working on getting better. And you know, everybody's going to learn something from it. I'm trying to right now. I just called the detective that did my case. And I asked him, I go, I want to get involved. right now. I want to get involved in schools, in like the DARE program and stuff like that. I want to talk to young kids the importance of having gun safety and gun classes and learning how to handle and how to be around guns and be yeah. with guns. You know, because even though I'm a victim of unfortunate circumstances, I'm still 100% pro-gun. You know, I'm 100% pro-gun education, learning how to handle them and doing them and taking care of that. Just because this happened to me, I'm not going to say, you know what, outlaw guns and ban guns yeah. and stuff like that, because that won't stop anything. We need to just educate. So I asked the officer about, you know, getting involved in DARE and stuff like that. The unfortunate part is right now in Prescott, their DARE program has been cut back so yeah. back, they have one DARE officer right now, and that's at the Prescott High School. And they cannot afford yeah. any other ones. And to me, that is such a disgrace when it comes to our kids' education. I mean, we can cut other things, but why cut something like that?
Yeah.
You know, if we want to teach everybody how to be safe, how to trust police officers, how to trust first responders, we need to teach them at a young age. Why take that away first before taking yeah. away other things? To me, that's not right. So, you know, hopefully I will be in touch with the right people to start asking questions about that. I want to get involved in something like that.
Well, I look forward to seeing more of you.
Oh, yeah,
thanks
definitely.
For making the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fascinating story. I'm glad we got to address
yes.
some of the rumors. And what was it again? Sum it up.
You know, the greatest rumor I heard? The greatest rumor, which I think was funny, which was kind of sad to me because my friends were the ones who were like, this is the only one that we really believed. And knowing who I am and after the entire story that I just told you, all of my friends came up to me. Okay, we need to know the truth. Was it either a boyfriend or a husband? Every single friend told me that. And I'm like, are you serious, dude? Like, unfortunately, that's what they think of me.
And that was what you said when you looked at it. That's unfortunate.
Yep.
I think that's what I'll title it, an unfortunate incident. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time. I know you sitting here this long is not best for you. Thanks for coming out. Thanks, Big Daddy's.
Thank you very much for having me, Matt. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
We'll do.
Well, that's the show. It's definitely interesting to listen to Mondo and as he tells us how it was to take a bullet in the back and his road to recovery. We wish him the best and look forward to seeing him out and about as he gets his strength back and gets his rehab taken care of. And again, we wish the best for Mondo. Don't forget, today's show was brought to you by Big Daddy E's Barbecue, BigDaddyE's.com in Chino Valley, and by Audible and Amazon. You can use both of those links, the Audible link and the Amazon link, right there at MileHighShow.com. Don't forget, also on our page in the About Us section and the Support Our Show page on MileHighShow.com, there's also a PayPal link. If you are so inclined, you can click that link and drop us a dollar or two or three or four or five, whatever you can to show your support for the show and help us to continue to travel around the great state of Arizona and the Southwest to bring you the stories that are worth telling. So check out that page if you can, and literally a buck or two. We'll take it. We'll take whatever we can get. So those are our commercials. PayPal link on the Support Us page. Main page, Audible and Amazon. That's it. That's all it takes. Talk to you next week.
I didn't shoot no deputy.